So Tim, can we just hang out and play U2 all day? I mean, is there a 5 o'clock show? The heck with them. We're sticking around, you and I, and we're just gonna bleed into that show. And yeah, absolutely. Thank you. We've got two new guests in the show with us here today. Our first studio guest, actually. I was starting to take it personally. Everybody was bailing on coming into the studio, but we've got Paul Bettings and Abena Thomas here with us today to talk about photography, to talk about the 1,000-day journey. What, pray tell, is that? We're going to find out more about it. We've got a new podcast that Abena here is to talk about as well, called In Progress, and we're going to get into all of that in a couple of minutes. But first out, thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Awesome. Thanks for inviting us.
Were you guys both as moved as I was by Drew Marshall's rapping? Oh, dead silence. Dead silence.
Move their bowels.
Yes. I thought this was a family show.
Okay, well, people have to.
It's true. The reason you're hearing Tim, well, I actually thought Tim had been silenced. You guys were out of the room, but clearly he hasn't been. You may hear him in the distance.
Okay.
Yeah. So thanks for coming. Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourselves. Maybe that's a good place to start. And we've got this podcast called In Progress to talk about. We're going to talk about maternal newborn child health, MNCH. Yep. What is that?
A mouthful, that's what it is.
It really is, yeah. And we're going to learn a bit about that. And Paul is here to, I know that you both have worked together. And what's kind of cool about this is there, you know, I could interview you, each of you separately, and we could easily do an hour out of the gate without too much trouble at all. But you've also worked together, and there's a ton of crossover, and I really love that. So Paul, tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are. And people can find out if they want to jack in online, paulbettings.com, is that right?
paulbettings.com, yeah, that's my website.
Yeah.
I'm a photographer. I do freelance work with and for World Vision, which means basically that I, every time they need images to be taken in project areas overseas in developing countries or here in Canada, usually I've got my hand on it somehow in regards to even just, you know, if I can't do it, finding another photographer or, you know, traveling overseas with Abena sometimes. We were just in Bangladesh just this past February, I think. February.
There's a little bit of a thread developing, too, because our guests coming up at 4 o'clock, Rick Campanelli Dr. Jolene Huber are going to be talking a little bit about
that. Yeah, and
that
I was
trip.
Just with them. No, so I went with Abena to Bangladesh in February, but I went again with Rick and Jolene in September.
Fantastic.
So I just... A lot of the images you would see on the Canadian sort of, you know, marketing pieces.
Do you only work for World Vision?
No. I have quite a few. Well, not quite a few. I have other clients I work for. I also do work here in Canada. I do aerial photography for sort of commercial real estate sort of stuff.
And what about the most important kind of photography, fashion photography? Do you do any of that?
You know, back when I was trying to figure out what it is I wanted to do with photography.
Yeah.
I called it fashion editorial is what I called it.
Oh, wow.
Was that to sort of give it some legitimacy? Not that it doesn't have an air of legitimacy. Of course it does.
No, I don't know what fashion editorial is. I just said that's what I do because I needed a title, right?
Yeah, I know. It sounds fancy. Was that on your business card?
I couldn't afford business cards.
Oh, wow. The life of the artist. Yes, it's becoming painfully clear. So am I going to see a coffee table book of your work one day? Or maybe you've already got one.
You know what? I'd like to say yes. I don't have one.
Right, okay.
I have an Apple iTunes iPhoto book for myself.
Nice, yeah.
But no, I would like to one day, yes. But, you know, I don't know. Yes. Let's say yes now.
Yeah. And I want to come back to that because I think the next question for me is how do you choose the photos that go in that? And, you know, and which leads to kind of clearly these would have to be moving photos or, you know, powerful photos, images that actually maybe can change the world. So I want to talk a bit more about that. Abena, so who are you and why are you here?
Oh, wow. The who are you question.
Yeah, it's a biggie.
That's intense.
It's a biggie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm a grant manager, public health specialist. I don't know which way to say that people understand exactly what my day-to-day looks like, but I work for an international development organization, World Vision, where I am designing and helping to implement and monitor programs that impact mothers and children overseas. So that's kind of the snapshot of it.
So if I'm a donor to World Vision, mm-hmm. are you spending my money or are you spending Canadian taxpayer money or a bit of both?
So currently right now I work on a grant that is predominantly funded by the Canadian government. It's called Enrich, but in Canada we call it the 1,000-Day Journey Project. So that is, the majority of the funding is from the Canadian mm-hmm. government, but there is some match funding from donors here in Canada.
So, right, right. Mm-hmm. And kind of fun and kind of relevant to you being on the radio here today, but you've started a podcast as well, which is
yeah.
kind of cool. Under this umbrella of this thing called the 1,000-Day Journey, which I want to hear more about, but tell us a little bit about the podcast.
So the podcast is really trying to bring that conversation of what does maternal child health look like, not only overseas, telling the stories of the work that we do and the impact that it's having or the ongoing challenges that there are, but also connecting that with stories that are here in Canada, trying to ensure that people recognize that it's not that different.
Mm-hmm.
There's commonality, there is humanity and connection across those spaces. So it's an opportunity to talk to people about their stories and what's impacting their lives and how they're addressing those issues.
So it's kind of sort of to humanize mm-hmm. in a way, not that it's not human, it is human, mm-hmm. but sometimes, and we were just talking with some folks from GAIN about their work in Syria, and you know, you see the photos, Paul,
mm-hmm.
you see the images and you kind of change the channel or you flip the page in the coffee mm-hmm. table book or whatever and you have another glass of wine and move on, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really cynical, but it's really easy for those of us who are living what I would call a privileged life.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to talk about what that means, but it's easy to ignore this. It sounds to me like this 1,000-Day Journey and your work with In Progress, and frankly, Paul, your work and Jolene and Rick coming in, they're trying to tell a story that helps to not level the playing field, but to humanize this intangible work that the Canadian government is funding.
Absolutely. And I think to help people understand it, I think we've all seen the commercials where you think there's an issue, somebody comes in and there's a solution, and it seems very sort of straight line rather than the complexity of what reality looks like and how do we navigate that? What actually is happening on the ground for a lot of donors, for the Canadian public? Do we really understand that? And if we understand that a little bit more, then we can engage more deeply, I think. That's
Why 1,000 days? Why not 1,001?
That's an interesting question. So when you think about statistically, there are, and sorry for getting my public health brain on here.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Well, okay. So globally, there are millions of children that die under the age of 5, right? And these are from preventable diseases. And one of the major underlying causes of that is actually malnutrition. When children aren't getting the right nutrition that they need early in life, it makes them more susceptible to disease, to infection, and it has some really long-lasting implications later in life, or even a risk of early mortality under the age of 5. So what that looks like, it's something called chronic malnutrition or stunting. And that first 1,000 days of a child's life from conception to 2 years of age is a window where we have the greatest opportunity to impact the health of a baby, to reverse malnutrition, to really set a child up for the growth and potential that's optimal for them. So that 1,000 days is that window to really impact the greatest growth potential for children. So that's what it is.
So let me ask the question that maybe some of our listeners are listening to or thinking right now. And I was recently made aware of some pretty, what I would call cynical responses to a campaign, mm-hmm. an international development-like campaign, and some of the voices on social media were things like, we should never be giving Canadian taxpayers' money away to other issues. What about what about our needs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what?
Mm-hmm.
And this is typically seems to be sort of an extreme response,
right?
Thankfully, most people don't react that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what about our needs? What about Canadian issues, and what about malnutrition in Canada? I mean, is that a factor? As a health professional,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could have right? You could have worked in that sector versus this sector. And I think I'm trying to get to know you a little bit more as well, but yeah. There's a lot wrapped up in that question, I suppose.
Yeah, I think obviously there are issues here in Canada as well when you think of what it does it mean to have access to quality health care. That doesn't look the same for everyone. You were just talking about refugees or new immigrants to Canada. Access is just because there's a hospital down the street doesn't mean that you have that access, right? So it is it's a legitimate question for me. But I think the reason why I do the work that I do is because I recognize that there is still a certain amount of privilege and opportunity here in Canada. We do have access to care basic needs like quality food, diverse foods, that isn't the same everywhere across the globe. So it's not an either or. I think it's right. A both and situation, because the Canadian government is funding initiatives that support health and nutrition and care here in Canada as well as overseas, right? But I think we need to think about what is it that we want as a human race to see right. For all having access.
Well, and it's so interesting too, right? And even Kevin McKay from GAIN, who we had on earlier, was talking about this generosity, supposedly, right. That Canadians have, and aren't we wonderful, kind mm-hmm. of, you know, and we do seem to have that international reputation, mm-hmm. not like, you know, all of our neighbors, right? I mean, it's true, right? I mean, mm-hmm. however, when you start to drill down at the numbers, I mean, we're maybe not quite as generous mm-hmm. as we think we are, mm-hmm. which I was really surprised by a few years ago when I started to dig a little deeper to find out what does the average Canadian give? And I'm talking mostly about finances now. Right. I'm not talking about volunteer hours, because that's a whole other mm-hmm. Thing that where Canadians do really, lean into the bar, mm-hmm. you know, if you will. But I love the fact that you've highlighted that it's not polarized.
No, yeah.
This isn't either or. This is both and. Mm. This is about reaching out and helping others and so on. Is this the kind of stuff that you're doing on your podcast, these kinds of conversations? By the way, it's called In Progress.
It's called In Progress,
you can get
yes.
to it on iTunes.
iTunes and other major podcast
excellent.
Avenues, yeah.
And what are you doing now with your newfound fame?
Trying to go back to hiding.
That's right.
Spent most of the first years of my career just buried doing some work, and then
right. Yes. Did Paul do your headshots for?
Oh
for
yeah,
In Progress?
Yeah. That was the first of life. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fantastic.
At the World Vision Office.
Yeah, there you go. Nice.
It all comes together.
It all comes back to fashion editorial.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So search iTunes for In Progress.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. is it weekly? Is it biweekly? What's
The episodes are actually biweekly. They should be coming out, but they're sort of targeted to different different periods of significance. So we had one during breastfeeding week that really talked about the challenges, because we're not trying to make this seem like everything is perfect and it's always easy and there's a straight line here. I mean, things like breastfeeding, exclusive breastfeeding for moms all over the world, it's difficult. It's complicated. There are challenges. And how do you deal with that? What are the support networks around you to support you to do what's best for your health as a mother, but then also what's best for the baby? And that choice looks different. It's not identical amongst two people standing right beside each other, far less worlds apart. And how do we engage and support for the healthiest start for moms and babies?
You know, I interviewed Nigel Fisher. He was the head of the UN in Rwanda and mm-hmm. Haiti during the earthquake. And I mean, this guy's been around. Just Nigel Fisher, look into him if you're interested. Anyway, super good guy and so much wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking him kind of, well, Nigel, what is it sort of after all these years and what have you learned? What's the wisdom to be drawn from? And one of the things he talked about was everyone is looking for health care for their kids,
absolutely.
For their family. I mean, there's some pretty simple, like breastfeeding, mm-hmm. having children, having a family, pretty simple, great levelers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We're kind of all in this together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what that looks like in terms of people's support systems, whether that is sort of physical support with the care that you need or the social support. When you think about families or young women who have gotten married way too early, and how do we address things like that? I mean, they're complicated issues, and we need to come alongside because there's commonality. There's support that we all need. These are the great levelers of what life is for each and every one of us, right?
And there's lessons to be learned there for us, mm-hmm. too, right? That's another thing that, you know, having done this work for years, there's a tendency to step into those environments with the book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The book. Here's the three-ring binder. Mm-hmm. We've got it all sorted out. And even if you know that you don't have it all sorted out, there's still this perception, right?
Absolutely.
That oh, you're from the West, you're wealthy, and so on. And so we need to break those barriers down, and I love that you guys are doing that. Paul, can you communicate that stuff through photos? Can you change the world? Can you tell, you know, World Vision supporters, can you tell others, Canadians, that, you know, that some of the stuff that Abane is talking about here, does it bring me onto the other side? You know, convert me through a photo, I guess, is sort of what I'm saying.
Okay. Big question.
I know, and there's about 19 questions there, I believe, I just asked you.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Pick any one of them.
I think the power of a photo to change the world is a big statement. I think what it can do is engage people in like a thought process. It's like they see something and they think about something, and that thought process and that thinking will lead them to maybe change their mind or maybe not change their mind.
Starts a conversation.
Sure, yeah, it starts a conversation. When I'm traveling with Abane and I'm trying to get a photo or a series of photos, what I'm trying to do is tell a story more than communicate what MNCH is.
And what is MNCH again? Maternal newborn
child health.
Sure, yeah. Maternal newborn child health. Sorry, I should have said that.
That's okay.
But so what it comes down to for me is just showing real life of the people who live in Bangladesh or Myanmar or Tanzania or Kenya, which is where this project has taken place. And through those images, we can talk about the issues that they deal with on a daily basis, which may be they don't have access to a hospital, and therefore, what does that look like in their lives? What does that part of the story look like in their lives that they can't get to a hospital to get just basic health care, right? Mm-hmm. So I think an image can show a part of a story. It can change people's minds. There are photos that have changed the world.
And you know, Tim and I were talking earlier on about and I before the mic was on, I asked you how old you were, which is always a great right out of the gate question. Yeah. But 40 years ago today, Jonestown Massacre, the photos, Tim and I both commiserated on that before the show started today. And I was telling Elizabeth last night that I remember that image, and it was the cover of Newsweek. And we've probably all seen it in passing. A new documentary film Leo DiCaprio has produced, his company just released this weekend at Sundance, 4-hour film about the Jonestown Massacre on this 40th history. And this image has really stuck with me. Did it change my world? Did it turn my life upside down? I don't know about that, but it certainly became a part of my narrative. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And there's another one, Paul, that I really wanted to talk about, though, with you today, was that image that I know you know, the Pulitzer Prize-winning photo back in the 80s. Was it 80s? The Ethiopian famine, I believe. The vulture, yeah. The baby, taken by Kevin Parker. I mean, I think that photo did change the world.
Are you the one of the vulture and the baby?
Yeah.
So that wasn't actually in Ethiopia. It was taken in Sudan.
Sudan, thank you.
South Sudan.
Thanks.
People... I should say, from what I understand, it's a common misconception that it was taken in Ethiopia, but it's not. It was taken,
which is kind of interesting. That raises a good problem, kind of an issue around some of this stuff.
Yeah,
right?
It was taken in southern Sudan, and it was actually close to Juba. He just took a flight to like a UN sort of distribution area, and he took the shot, and he won the Pulitzer Prize, but it also caused a lot of like long-term grief in himself, but also because he got... The question it raises is, why didn't you help the child, right. You took the shot, why didn't you pick him up, and why didn't you, and he says he shoot away the vulture. It goes into a lot deeper sort of context, but that is, and I guess what I should say is that I don't think it is possible for a photo to change the world in some ways, but those photos, they're hard to come by.
They're hard,
right?
To come by, yeah.
And
yeah.
And they don't happen every day.
Well, and do photos need to change the world, right? Maybe they need to start a conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to add to the conversation that you're having about this 1,000-day journey, about malnutrition and about leveling the playing field and so on. And then from time to time, there will be these sort of iconic images that will turn everything upside down. Mm-hmm. And we had one recently, too, with the Syrian crisis, right? The boy on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there have been these ones, and there have been many, many, many others, I would think, over the years. No, well, it's interesting. Kevin Parker, I believe, was the name of that photographer, and it was the Bang Bang Club was what they called themselves. There was four of them. I don't know if you know this story, Tim, but it's a film we're seeing kind of panned by the critics, but Ryan Phillippe was in it, I believe. But anyway, those guys all struggled. There was a suicide, Kevin's suicide. One of them was blown up by a landmine, I believe.
Yeah.
One of them was shot in South Africa. I mean, these are war journalists. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, just for the photo. But there's got to be something else there, right? This was about something else, but I'm not sure what that is. But
well, the Bang Bang Club, it's like they were at a very, they're in a very specific time, in a very specific place, and the photos needed to be seen. And what they were doing was very important. And yes, two of them are dead, and one of them got his legs blown off. There's a fourth guy, too, that's still around, but
and I believe he was actually shot as well. I mean, these guys, guys had a rough go.
Yeah.
I mean, it raises interesting questions about the Vietnam War too, mm-hmm. right? They people. This was the first time a war was actually televised, and those images had an impact. How hard would it be to get me into GQ? This is the question.
Impossible, my friend.
Impossible. Yeah. Yes. However, a guest coming up, Rick Campanelli, and I hope he's listening. It'd be pretty easy to get Rick in, don't you think? Rick is like,
I would say so.
Yeah, I think he's been on.
I think
page
both
three.
Rick and Jolene could probably be in
GQ. Yeah, that's probably true. Abena, so you talked about access.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, talk to me a little bit. You've traveled a fair bit. You've been doing this work for a while. Talk to me about access and impact. I think they're connected, or maybe, you know, pick one or the other. But are you making a difference? Is global affairs making a difference in this work, you know, as they step into these? And it's five countries, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So
for this particular project.
For this particular project, we have been operating in Kenya, Bangladesh, Myanmar, Tanzania, and Pakistan. So we've been operating since 2016, and really the impact that change that we want to see is progressing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to start from somewhere. When I think of the context, maybe to set the scene a little bit, in Myanmar, where we are sort of in a region that is really remote. And remote not in just getting there from sort of the capital and things like that, but also for communities where you're traveling by boat and then you're traveling by motorcycle in low water periods. And for a mom who needs to actually take 2 to 3 hours to actually access the nearest health facility, access is something that is life-changing,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's another way to put that. We have seen and interacted. Paul also has had opportunity to meet different families where that is really a factor of life and death. How am I going to access the care that I need? And so when we think about particular stories, there's a mother by the name of Zinmar, and we've tried to share her story, translate her story with the utmost respect, because it is a situation where she did give birth at home and her child became ill within the first few days. And there wasn't that access to healthcare. There wasn't the ability to reach out and go and get transportation to get the care that baby needed, and unfortunately the child passed away. So this is reality. This is not something that is that's just spoken about. It is the reality of families. So when I think about the impact that we're having, there isn't just one solution. So in the case of this project, we have to think about layered solutions. So first of all, when you think about the facilities, are there facilities? Do they have the right equipment? Do they have the right supplies to provide the services that are needed? Step one, or one component of what we need to think about. Then for a mom who is either pregnant herself or has a young child, recognizing when there is need for that external care, understanding what the risks are, what are the complications during pregnancy, what are the signs of things like pneumonia or a severe case of diarrhea where you really do need to go and seek that care. So how do we increase mother's knowledge and caregiver's knowledge around care and support? So that education piece at the household level is also another component.
You talked about the water level. I mean, there's a nuance. Talk about a layer that I would think a lot of us don't really consider. So I can now not get to a drugstore that doesn't even exist. Maybe a pharmacy of some kind would exist too far away,
or a shop
or something. And that assumes, of course, a whole lot of other things.
Right.
But when during rainy season versus dry season, it changes
it
everything.
It changes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
I was ticked off yesterday that they didn't have an extra large size of Lactaid for me at the pharmacy, right? So so maybe a little too much information there, folks. But come on. You mean I got to pay more for the smaller size?
Yes.
Like, this is an outrage. They're making me, I have to go to another pharmacy, right? Which is a kilometer away,
right?
So anyway, I'm trying to be silly and gifted in hyperbole here, but still, and this isn't about guilt. This isn't about shame. This isn't about saying, hey, you have it, therefore everyone should have it. But there is something there.
There is something
about, to be discussed,
right? Yeah, and I think there is, again, the driver for me is, I don't know when this kind of got into my spirit or my system a long time ago, but there but for the grace of God go I, right? And it's this concept of there are things that we can do. There are cost-effective solutions that have been tried and tested that we can do to support families. You're not coming in and taking over. Again, we don't want to be that Westerner coming in and just, you know, our way is the best way. It's not that at all. It's sort of engaging people where they are, walking alongside them to find solutions that are appropriate for their context. So in the case of Myanmar, we have boat ambulances, and we've worked with the community to identify a way to make that operational within their context to support. We've trained community health workers to be able to go and visit at the household. I don't know. Sometimes I've used this when I've taught students, you know, that Field of Dreams reference, you know, if you build it, they will come. No, it's not physically possible sometimes. So how do you bring that healthcare, that education, that support to the households where it's absolutely needed the most? And so these are the things that we're trying to do. And we've seen change. We've seen impact in families and households where women are delivering safely at a health facility. Children are getting access to the right nutrients, so they're growing healthy. And you can see that there's change, not only within that household, but within that community, right?
Yeah, that's remarkable. I love. Well, you know what I really love as I'm listening to you? I was thinking, Paul, I was thinking in images. And I've done a fair bit of work. I haven't been into Myanmar, but I've done a lot of work in Cambodia over the years. And so I was on that river ambulance there with you for a minute and sort of imagining it almost, maybe not through a lens, that's your job, but I could see these images or the video of it.
Yeah.
And this is a part of what you're doing with this program, right? You're taking photos, you're helping to tell a story, you're pushing a narrative forward. You're also making videos as well where people can, and by the way, 1000dayjourney.ca?
Yes.
Yeah. So you can see some of the work that you're doing, Paul and Abena, obviously, but tell me about an image, you know, 1000 words. I said I'd come back to it. What's an image for you that maybe either resonates from your own work or a story or an image that I don't know, changed the way you saw the world.
Like from Myanmar or just in general?
Yeah, maybe just in general. I mean, maybe from Myanmar, but...
I think for me, it's less about a specific image and it's more about like styles and sort of just the ideas that I see people trying to convey through their images, right? So there
so
are...
That's the artist
sure,
slash
yeah.
photographer.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
Like when I see a good image, I'm like, wow, where was that? How did he get it? How did he get access to like wherever he was? Where did he, you know, where was that happening? There's a few shots. We talked about the Afghan girl with the green eyes. That's always one that people sort of say, have you seen that National Geographic? Of course, everybody, well, most people have. For me, there's a big photojournalism like kind of conglomerate called the World Press Photo, and every year they do like the World Press Photo Show, and the winner is always this amazing photo. And most years I do a little bit of research on it, but last year it was a shot from the protests, and I think he was the winner. But anyways, either way, you can look it up. And it was a shot of a protester running with a gas mask on. He was on fire. And it's not just like, yeah, a little flame. Like, his whole back was on fire. And this image, like, it was only a year ago now that I've seen it. But it blew, like, this photo is an amazing photo. And it's not that it was, like, stylistically amazing. The guy was just in the right place at the right time. And that's often what it is, right? Often it's, like, the Afghan girl... He was just at the right place at the right time. His name's Steve McCurry, and he's still doing that same style of photography. He's still often in Afghanistan. He's just taking really good portraits. But this one that he took with these green eyes was unbelievable.
So I'm not sure what kind of question this, but are you hoping for that guy on fire photo? Like, personally? Like, maybe it's not a guy on fire with a gas mask on, but are you hoping for that Pulitzer Prize photo? Or, and I think the other question I want to ask is, what draws you to that? Is it the story that it tells, or the emotion it draws out of you, or is it more the technical kind of aspect of it?
I wouldn't say that I'm ever hoping for. I just want to take photos.
You just want to take
right?
photos.
And
yeah.
If I'm in the right place at the right time one day and that happens, that's great. Like, I'll
yeah, you know what?
Like
okay, can I go corny
moment,
on you? I think you are in the right place all the time. You know what I mean?
Sure,
when you're
yeah.
taking photos, and especially when you're telling a story like this, right? Maybe it's not I guess you don't win a Nobel Prize. You win a Pulitzer, right, for a photo.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You can win a Nobel.
Can you? Oh, interesting.
I don't know. Maybe. I shouldn't say that.
Well, you
actually.
Should.
Maybe,
you should. Know. Can we write some letters? Can we start a social
petition.
Media campaign? Yeah.
1,000 days of writing.
That's right. Yeah. 1,001 reasons why you should be able to get a Nobel Peace Prize for one of Paul Betting's photos.
Yeah.
That's the campaign.
Yeah.
Well, for a photo. Let's
for
not
a,
put my name
yeah,
on there. Just yet.
Yeah,
okay. Maybe in, you know, some other time.
So you're in Myanmar. When you're taking photos, when you're managing video teams, et cetera, are you thinking about the people you're taking the photos of? Are you thinking about the bigger picture, about how important this is going to be to the fundraising campaign or the social media campaign, or how we're going to engage Canadians in this story? Or are you just sort of, you're so in the moment that it's, I just got to get this now and get it.
I would
it.
Say it's a bit of everything. So yeah. I look at this photo of this guy on fire and I'm like, amazing that he got that.
Right.
Because there is a part of you that just, you need to know your camera like the back of your hand.
Yes.
Like you see a guy running at you, he's on fire, and it's like you need to make that happen. For me, when I'm in these places, I'm not necessarily thinking specifically about maternal and newborn child health. Maybe the messaging is in the back of
sure.
my head.
Yep.
Maybe the idea that, you know, we have to show that this is a remote space and whatever. But really what I'm just trying to do is tell a story. I'm trying to like convey just normal life for these people, and I'm not trying to force anything, right? I'm not trying to say, hey, I want a really cool shot of you on fire, right? Like, I'm not trying to,
take two,
let's do this. I'm just trying to say, like I just want to insert myself into your life for 3 days or 2 hours or a day and a half, however much time I have, and I want to see what you do. Like, where do you get your water? Right? Or how do you get your food? Like, can I come with you to the market? How do you go to town? Do you take a boat? Great. Can I come with you on that boat? And you know, sometimes, you know, just being there, the very presence of me changes everything, right? Well, and I can't get that natural
setting.
Well,
there's that classic, right? The Heisenberg uncertainty principle says if you put a camera into a situation of any kind, this was a scientific thing, it changes the way atoms work, right? But but this is, you're changing the situation, the way people behave, or you may, not necessarily, you may, which raises a question, and I know we only have a few more minutes, sadly, but I wanted to talk about context a little bit because I think, Paul, with the work that you do and what I love about what you do is it allows me to go there in a way that I can't. And I think for me, having worked in fundraising and development for so many years, one of the things I've noticed is getting people on the ground can make all the difference in the world. So if I could take somebody by the hand and walk through a Cambodian community or a Bangladeshi community and say, you know what, look what your support has done. Mm-hmm. Look what your volunteerism has done. Look at the impact the Canadian government is having here, right? Context seems to be everything. Mm-hmm. Abena, can you talk a little bit about that? That, you know, you talked about the both and.
Yeah.
Right? Can you talk a little bit about that context and how important it is?
It is. I think for myself personally, I will say that this is the first project, and I've been on since the very beginning, where we've really taken that concept into consideration. Mm-hmm. It was something that the Canadian government was really keen on in terms of getting that public engagement, that awareness. But how do you do that? I've been so focused in my technical world looking at the programming, but to get the public to understand and to come alongside, they need to see that image. And we can't fly everyone over there, but we can share that story in a more real way. And I think the thing that, for me, working with Paul and seeing him operate is the real, like that realness of telling it like it is instead of a prepackaged thing. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question here, but like, I just really think we have to be able to communicate the messy of what's happening in life and allow people to see that, because I think that's what breaks down the walls.
Well, and it doesn't always work.
Exactly.
These interventions don't always work, and it seems to me that we're kind of afraid of that,
right?
Of that that transparency, that authenticity. We had a leadership consultant on earlier talking about that and how to make a better corporate working environment. Well, you need to build trust, you need to build authenticity, and you need to be transparent. Well, maybe development workers, maybe NGOs need to be a little bit more like that in order to grow what they're doing. I mean, I think the word on the street is that the community, the fundraising is down.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It is a struggle across the board, the sector wide. And why is that? Maybe it has something to do with what we're talking about here. I do that transparency side of things. When you say the Canadian government, you mean Global Affairs Canada, correct?
Yes.
It's a part of the government.
Yeah, the part of the government. Yeah. So Global Affairs Canada is where the source of the funding is coming from.
So a fraction of my tax dollars
are going towards funding multiple projects, not just this one, but there is a large investment. The Canadian government has done a lot over the years in investing in maternal child health globally, and is recognized for that, and so we're part of that funding.
Yeah, that's amazing. So Paul, what's paulbettings.com, by the way? We'll just get another little plug in there for you. How come you don't do weddings?
I did weddings.
Oh, did you do weddings? Yeah.
I did, way back. Right out of photography school.
I mean, come on, isn't that where all the money is?
Wedding editorial.
Let's start it. It's a new thing, right?
Yes.
I did weddings, and I did that world for a while. And
yeah.
It actually, when I decided to stop doing weddings is when I started getting into World Vision. Like, I got a small contract for 7 months, and then it started snowballing from there.
Craziest thing you've done to get a good photo, leaning out over the rapids on a slippery surface, hanging from an oak tree over a burning fire. What have you done that's kooky to get that great shot? Anything come to mind?
I've stood in the path of a huge dust storm in North Africa. Got stuck in it. I did hang from a tree once.
Much like I've, a bat. Fruit I've, bat. Yes. Yeah. No, that's just Paul. Yep.
I was photographing unofficially the post-election violence in Kenya.
Oh, wow.
And I got dropped off as a civilian photographer.
Was that
in between the SWAT like police and the protesters.
Was that in Eldoret? That wasn't in
Eldoret. No, I was in Nairobi.
That was in Nairobi.
And that was just a bad call on my part. But to get the photo, I just made a bad decision and got stuck in the middle of these two factions.
Did you get any photos?
I did.
You did, yeah.
But I also ran.
Yeah. And were any of them in focus?
They're bouncy. they're blurry. Oh, they're sharp, but they're I got some shots. That was sort of one of the times that I thought maybe I shouldn't be here. But
yeah, no, it's crazy talk. And the Bang Bang Club, I mean, that film, we talked a little bit about that really shows you what people will do, what photographers will do, what journalists will do to tell that story. And we need people like that.
I think what it is you guys are talking about previously about showing them the messiness, but what I think that is also is showing the truth.
Yes.
And I think that is super difficult, even as a photographer, trying to show the truth of the matter is a constant struggle.
Yeah.
Because it's like I can take an image and I just maybe show not this one side.
What did you leave out of the image?
What did I leave out?
Or what did I put in? Took.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
No, these are really important questions.
So I think showing the truth is hard. And as a photographer and as, you know, a development practitioner, as like a manager, it's something that you're always trying to figure out how to do properly well. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you both for joining me today. I love conversations where I get to the end and I think, hang on a minute, we just started. Mm. What the heck is going on around here? So clearly we'll have to do this again and hopefully, can we make sure Drew invites me back? We'll have maybe a part two.
You can say no.
I was going to say that was a little hesitation.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have a microphone, right? So we've silenced Tim. This is my new favorite phrase. How to silence Tim Miller.
You, Andrew.
That's right, yeah. Abena Thomas works for World Vision Canada.
Yes.
In Progress is the podcast. Check it out on iTunes, thousanddayjourney.ca for more information. Over the next couple of years, there's going to be a film coming. There's video. There's lots more photos. PaulBettings.com. Folks, he doesn't do weddings. So just remember that. And thank you both for... but he might. He might.
I've done a few of them over the past couple
years. No job is too big.
Years,
no fee is too big. Right, Paul? That's your motto. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, right.
Thank you to both of you for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.